Hello and welcome to this special edition of The Wagon, with me, Finty Williams, and my esteemed friend, John McEwan. I don't know about you, John, but it feels very strange not to be able to see the people I'm talking to.
Very weird, looking at a computer screen.
Today, we are really lucky to be joined by the counsellor and psychotherapist, Billy Hazeldine. Billy started working in 1994 and has worked extensively at the Maudsley Hospital. He was a manager at the Community Drug Project, which is a charitable organisation in South London. He spent several years working his magic at the Priory Hospital, where I was lucky to meet him, and after which he established his own practice in Harley Street. Not only that, but he's found time to work as a travelling therapist, touring with bands such as the Rolling Stones and Placebo. He is now the current clinical manager of Ibiza Calm. And we've always said, without Ibiza Calm's help, this podcast would not have been possible. Billy, we're really, really grateful that you joined us today. Thank you so much.
Good morning, Finty. Good morning, John. Thank you for asking me.
Hi, Billy.
It's very kind of you.
No, listen, as I say, very strange times at the moment. And I know from my days working in primary treatment that it's stressful enough at the best of times. So what we'd like to do is explore, obviously, some of those situations that you found yourself in with you and your team and obviously managing a bunch of clients. But could we just start with you? I mean, how has it been for you being a manager of a clinic during the lockdown?
It's a really good question because I never really stopped and had time to think about it. I guess one of the difficulties was at first it was quite disbelief with everyone. Nobody really knew what was happening. And what was going on. After a while, some staff, I must say, become extremely anxious. And the more and more things were happening, the more and more I found that I was having to support the staff in incredible ways, and not just about what's happening with the virus. So it's been a challenge. It's been a real challenge to do that and balance that with clients, new clients coming in and explaining to them the situations and what we're doing in Ibiza Calm to keep everyone safe. And on a personal level, it's been difficult because I haven't really stopped to think about it. I guess through years of experience, I just put my head down and keep working, really, is the best way to describe it.
Yeah, it's been fascinating, hasn't it, right across the board. I know we're going to open up more widely in a second. And you were saying earlier that some of the clients actually wanted to extend even.
Well, that was quite interesting. It was something we didn't really foresee coming. But what we had is about four or five clients who decided they didn't want to leave. They wanted to extend. I think that was a dual thing. We had a lot of people with dual diagnosis, but also people felt very safe and saw the extent we were going to in Ibiza Calm with how serious we were taking the situation with, you know, the continuous washing of the hands, the social distancing. These seem to be really effective and actually re-enable clients to feel safe. We stopped going out. We started to instantly implement stuff like online meetings and stuff. So they felt safe and didn't want to leave.
Yeah. And I believe you did that for the ex-clients as well. Wasn't there some sort of support group? There is some sort of Zoom support group available.
Yeah, we have a therapist in London who runs an aftercare group once weekly, and we put that online. And that the response to that has been incredible. I mean, she regularly is speaking to lots of clients all around, wherever we get clients, all of our clients from Europe, from the world. And there's been lots of talk on that as well about how treatment has changed. How I think treatment will change. So, yeah, having the support in online as well has been magnificent on some levels.
How do you think it's going to change, Billy?
I think, Finty, if I'm honest, I think that when you listen to people on the island, there seems to be a split at the moment in Ibiza. I mean this sincerely, it's very safe. Like I said, we have nurses in hospitals who are telling us how the coronavirus is practically non-existent here. But yet you still see people in recovery saying, no, they don't want to come out. Indeed, I've heard people tell me we're not coming out to at least September. So I think platforms like the are able to run meetings like your Zoom and your iModes, I think they will continue for the rest of the year, maybe longer, I'm not sure, but people have built up wide networks of them. It hasn't all been negative in that sense, because it gives you an option to change and be in meetings. But so I think it will have an impact on the way meetings are run, NA meetings are run, AA meetings are run. It isn't a replacement for treatment. People know that. People know they still need help. But there's a lot of fear around at the moment. And that's the thing I think we are going to see a real backlash with, the anxiety, the psychosis and stuff. That I think people will still need a lot of help and a lot of support. But, you know, from everything, I think good things can come from this. And I think the fact that people seeing you can keep in communicating with people is wonderful. However, it is very isolating, which I'm not a big fan of.
Yes, John and I was saying, you know, one of the most important things, whether it's when you're in treatment or when you first come out, it's having human communication. It's being able to hug somebody who's having a bad day, or saying, you know, I'm frightened of going into this meeting, will you sit next to me? It's having that, it's having that actual human communication, which is so important.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you, Finty. And one of the things I have noticed is, especially on the island, is going to the meetings online, you're not seeing the newcomer coming into those meetings online. You're just not seeing it. And of course, you know, when you 12-step people, you go out and you meet them and you bring them into meetings, and there's that human contact, because, you know, you want to have a coffee with them afterwards, because people are freaked out when they come into meetings, which is a big worry, because people need to be introduced to the fellowship. People need to be introduced to treatment. But the way things are going, it's much more in an isolated way, which for me is, I feel quite fearful for them, because I don't see the newcomer coming into the meeting, which is worrying.
Well, because isolation is, you know, it's one of the factors, isn't it? It's the thing that a lot of people retreat to before they get well and start living their lives again.
Yeah, absolutely. And addicts love to isolate. It's one of the things that is part of our illness, is we isolate. We want to isolate. It protects our illness in our minds. When we're in early recovery, we believe it's what's best for us. And it's difficult to try and explain to people that the isolation is not good for you. You know, it's not what you need. You need to come out. And so, you know, constantly as manager of IB for Calm, I'm constantly trying to say to people, you know, like, you need a bit more of human contact.
Isolation is such a killer for some people. And, you know, I don't use that word lightly. I don't really want to go off on a tangent here, but I know, obviously, we're not just talking about addiction. We're talking about mental health and anxiety disorders, general anxiety disorders, depression, bipolar depression. People can still they still can contact their doctors and GPs. And maybe for people who are listening to this, who are feeling lonely, they can do that. They can get prescriptions delivered. You know, so there is some help available. But like you, Billy, I'm fearful that there's almost a kind of lost group here that were just on the edge anyway of needing to put their hands up and ask for help, that don't seem to be able to be doing that or to have done that. I know you wrote some stuff recently, Billy, about what people can do. I don't know if you could just touch on that in terms of people who hopefully listen to this, who might just need some sort of basic suggestions to get them through this phase.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote some stuff lately, and it was about how you can get support. And, you know, one of the ways is to, if you go onto your website and you type in NA London, for instance, all of the meetings are coming up with a link next to them. And if you click on those links, you can join meetings 24 hours a day. You know, that's one way of getting some support. It's difficult, but the good thing is you can just sit and listen. You don't have to have your video on. You can get that support if you want from your own home. And I found it invaluable. I have to be honest, being at home, I often just click on and I listen. And it's been very great for me. Also, people in recovery, I think it's really important that they stay in touch with their social network, the people they really know, you know, and your sponsor. And because we're locked down, that doesn't mean that we're limited to reaching out for help. We can, you know, just picking up that phone, speaking to somebody, like, you know, even Ibiza Carbon, we're open, we'll take your call, we will talk to you. It's about supporting people. And really just talking is the key here. It's for your mental health, is being able to talk and get someone to identify with you and get somebody to support you. These things are imperative. You must do these, whether you've been in recovery 5 minutes or 30 years. It doesn't matter. These things have to continue. There's other things. It's always trying to maintain a routine. You know, it's imperative that you keep your routine going, if it's exercising. And when people talk about exercise, you don't have to go and exercise like, you know, some of these videos show you. A good walk, like Finty was saying earlier, you know, just a nice walk. It's exercise. It gets you out. It just helps you. It just clears that mind a little bit, so you don't feel the sort of locked in, because we all know that exercise, it releases the chemicals that we need, endorphins, serotonin. It lifts your moods and it can reduce your stress levels. All of this stuff is so important, you know. There are a few more things I can suggest, you know, but I'm sure, you know, I don't want to go over old ground, but it is keeping yourself busy. It is trying to occupy yourself, which for addicts is difficult, because we tend to just want to slob out on the sofa and Netflix it. But that's not good for us all the time. Occasionally that's fine. It's fine. But you do need to keep a routine. You've got to keep a routine up going.
Also, I think that's really important what you said, that, you know, certainly what I've found is that you listen to actually what you need. So that if you are tired or, you know, you don't feel great, that actually you do give yourself a bit of a break and you sit on the sofa and you cuddle up. And and if that is the thing that keeps you safe at that point, then that's really good. I feel quite strongly about the sort of pressure that people have put out about, you know, oh, you must learn a new language or write a novel or learn a musical instrument. It's those things are the things that panic me. So it's giving yourself permission to do what you are able to do safely, and for your own mental well-being.
Absolutely. I agree completely, Finty. And on a personal level, you asked me earlier, you know, I have two grown children and I haven't seen them since this pandemic started, but we talk to each other regularly, and that's important. It's just keeping that connection going. But equally, it is okay to sit down and read a book. All these things are okay. It doesn't mean you're lazy. These things are... this is taking care of yourself. This is looking after your own needs. And I can't emphasize enough how important that is, to feel okay about doing nothing, sitting with yourself, learning to sit with yourself, and being kind to yourself. What you would say to other people is be gentle with yourself. Nurture that side of you that probably in addiction you've never nurtured. And I think it's really, really important that people understand that you nurture yourself. You just keep nurturing yourself.
Yeah, which interestingly, again, brings us on to another part of the conversation, and maybe even in some way might feel like going backwards, but it's into the kind of different groups of people who may abuse certain substances at certain times. So I'll just lay out three categories, and if we could discuss this, I think it'd be interesting. So there's people who abuse a bit of cocaine, maybe even more than a bit of cocaine, but they go to the pub, they have a few drinks, they buy cocaine, they have a dinner party, they drink, they buy cocaine. So a lot of those functions have stopped now. So people aren't using the cocaine as much, if at all. So that would suggest that maybe those people aren't either at that stage of addiction, or maybe not particularly those types of people who would turn out to have an addiction problem, if you like, those who become physiologically dependent. Then there's the people who are on the edge of addiction, who may be sort of, for want of a better word, caning and overdoing drink and drugs, whatever way we want to see this. So I expect that a fair few of those people have carried on that pattern of use to cope with the stress of lockdown and perhaps the isolation of lockdown. And then, of course, the third category is people who were already in their addiction. I read some stuff about methadone patients. Those methadone patients that used to have to go every day for their prescription are now given a week's supply at a time. Well, of course, most addicts abuse that, so they're running out of methadone, so they're buying more heroin. So maybe that second group of people who are just on the edge of abusing or probably abusing more. Any thoughts? You mightn't even agree on that.
It's an interesting point you raise, John, because what I've seen is I have friends where I live who are, one would consider, not addicts, and yet I had dinner with them Saturday, and I'm saying every single day since this lockdown they've been drinking, and it's now become their norm. They just normally, they come home, even if they've only just been out to start work, but before that, it's like, okay, is it 1 o'clock time? Okay, well, it's 5 o'clock, so that's 1 o'clock time. And people have been using, and their alcohol, the people I talk to, levels have been increasing just because there's nothing else to do. Regarding the methadone prescriptions, I spoke to a really good colleague and friend of mine in London. She was the chair of the GP Association, and it's exactly what you said, John. They are giving people scripts, prescriptions for much longer for methadone. But what's happening is, she was telling me, is that they give out these prescriptions and there are no checks on it. So a week later, the addict is phoning up saying, well, I've run out of methadone. And she said, and what are we supposed to do? Say, no, you can't have it. We can't bring them in. We can't check them because of the COVID virus. And they're running out. And she said, so all of a sudden now I'm having to write double prescriptions because what are we supposed to do with these people? So people are getting in a situation where they're indoors and they're isolated and they're using their prescriptions in an abusive way. And they're not being monitored. They're not being looked after. They're not, and nobody's talking to them about, there is another way. There is a treatment way. You can go down the treatment route. Really now, it's, you just, I mean, I'm amazed that if I get my own prescriptions for my asthma tablets, pumps, I just go online, order it, boom, bang, it's delivered to my chemist, I go and get it. That's exactly the same as what they're doing with methadone and stuff now. Nobody is checking it. So it is very worrying and very concerning about what will be the outcome of this. How will it affect people in the longer term, especially the addicts and alcoholics? How are they going to really deal with this? Because all of a sudden, you know, the doctor will stop giving them those double prescriptions. So what's going to happen? So it's a really interesting point you make, and it's where do... There will be an influx of people with not just addiction, but psychotic illnesses, all number of coexisting disorders are going to come out. So, yeah, it's worrying. It's very worrying what the outcome of this will be, because COVID has been such a, everyone's focused on COVID. But there's also another monster sleeping just across the road here that nobody's really noticed, and that's called mental illness. And that's what worries me the most.
Yeah, well said. And Finn, you were talking earlier about some colleagues in your world of acting who are getting particularly stressed out, given the fact that the theatres won't be opening for...
Yes, I mean, we don't... Time. You know, suddenly our jobs were taken away from us, and we have no direct information about when the theatres will open again, or when recording studios will open again, or any of film sets, any of those things. So people feel terribly vulnerable and terribly lost. And I've had a couple of friends who are in, you know, really quite a bad way about it. You know, and also there is the hideous thing of the fact that we have no money. You know, we have no income. We haven't been furloughed, so... You know, there are a lot of people for who this will be a really massive thing, who at the end of it won't be able to afford to go into treatment, or, you know, they will have to rely on meetings online and things like that. And as we were saying, that's, you know, that's a really frightening thing in itself.
And if you don't mind, I'd like to add on to that, John. Sorry to interrupt. Is, you know, the bands I work with, they're in the same situation. All their tours have been cancelled this year. They can't record new music because they're isolated in separate places. So now that's them. But then if you look at the bigger, wider picture, all the roadies, all the people that help them, they're all in the same situation. They can't be furloughed. They can't earn any money. They're all, for want of a better word, taking way too much alcohol and drugs. And I'm in contact with them constantly because that's my job, is to support them. So there is a wide thing, and that's just talking about in the music industry, but Finty's talking. But if you imagine that in the general population, you can only imagine what's going on out there.
Yeah, yeah. And hope's a funny thing, isn't it? Because what we do in our world is we talk to people about hope. And the need, and we will do that, and we'll do that in today's podcast, by the way. But it's quite a difficult thing to instill in people, isn't it? Sometimes that haven't really had to have ever been in this position before, and I'm not just talking again about addiction, to try and find a way out of your mental health loop, and that's why, as we've said, it's really important to try and get that voice out, to share that, to kind of, I think you've put it, Bill, is talk about the demons in your head. I mean, it mightn't even seem like demons in your head. It's just that dialogue that until we stop and look at what our thinking is actually saying, we don't know how much trouble we're in. And again, I'm hoping that some of that will be covered in our podcast, is just that you're not alone with this. You know, we all have those critical voices, we have those thoughts that think, my life will never be the same, what's the point in going on, or I've had a bottle of wine today, sod it, you know, let's have that second one. So let's talk about hope a bit, if we can. Any thoughts on what people can hold on to at the moment?
For me, it's a funny thing. It's interesting you brought up hope, John. I remember when I was using, I gave up on hope. I had no hope. And in recovery and in my training, what I changed that word to is belief. And it's a belief that somebody can help me, that I'm not alone, that I can deal with this. And I think my message to people out there would be, you've got to believe that if you pick that phone up, that there is a future for you, there is a life for you. You just need to have the belief that there are people who are in exactly the same situation as you, that have been there, who have done it, who have gone, walked the same steps as you. For me, it's a real belief, that a belief and trust in somebody else. Because without that, I think what's left? And that's the worrying thing for me. It's a real belief that if you can just try that connection with somebody, believe in them, believe that they got your best interests at heart, and all, as a recovering addict, all I want is for my fellow addict who suffers is a belief that they can do and achieve and gain the same things that I've been lucky enough to gain in my recovery. I'm not special or different from anybody else. I just always had the belief that people who are cleaner than me, people who had time in recovery, can help me. And if I just listen to them and do what I need to do, and it was suggested to me very early on, go into treatment. You really need treatment. And I did it. I just believed that was the way forward. So when I hear the word hope, I have a sort of mixed reaction to it. It's the hope I lost when I was using, but it was the belief I gained in recovery that has kept me through celebrating 30 years yesterday in recovery. So,
fantastic.
Wow, that's amazing, Billy.
You know, I don't know if that's kind of controversial, but it definitely was the hope. It was turned into a belief that people can, there are other people out there suffering exactly the same way as I am, who can help me.
Vince.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's really hard at the moment, because I think that, you know, if you do feel lost, I think as Billy said, you have to pick the people who you speak to very carefully, because everybody's feeling lost at the moment. And everybody's feeling, you know, a sense of fear or isolation or any of those things, or anger. And it's very easy to go, oh, well, it's because of COVID that you're feeling like this. And I think that you just have to, if somebody, you know, if somebody reaches out, I think you have to really hear what they're saying. And my hope would be that the people who really need it find the right people to speak to.
Yeah, that's lovely.
Yeah,
and there is something about the risk taking, isn't there? Because we were talking to a guest just recently about the process of stopping, the process of getting well, and we can't fast forward and certainly skip through the fact that change is painful. You know, we've all been through, we're all people who've overcome addiction, and just for today, as they say, we're clean and sober. But there is an element of work, isn't there, involved? And as you say, we need other people to help us through that. We need other people to guide us. We need other people to say, look, it's okay. It's okay to fall apart. It's okay to cry. It's okay to get angry. And I know a lot of the philosophy around the Abhidha calm is trying to love people through that too. But I'm saying this because I think if people are listening and they're struggling, you can get through this. You know, you do have to reach out, but you do have to feel some of those feelings. You do have to have night sweats if that's what's required. You know, part of getting well is working through those really difficult stages. And I think that's why, as we know, people give up because they don't think it's going to be worth it. So I guess that's just for me, that I just wanted to say that out aloud, that you know, that the withdrawal symptoms, whether that be physical or even psychological, is necessary. But yeah, of course, ideally we share that with other people. We find a meeting online or a self-help book, something just to give us that bit of something to hold on to, that little bit of a life raft, as some people call it.
You know, what my hope actually might be, that this time has alerted people who don't suffer from addiction about some of the feelings that you feel as an addict, about the fear of isolation, about the fear of the unknown, about anxiety, about all of those things. And it might be that this time has given the people who I deem to be the normal people the chance to understand maybe some of the things that we feel. And it might make them more empathetic towards it.
I think that's a lovely thought. What do you think of that, Billy? I think it's a really major point.
I think it's wonderful. And I think it's, yeah, very eloquently put. I think that what you both said is extremely important, is that, you know, it is trying times for people. It really is. It's very, very, very difficult. I think it's not something we've experienced for a long time, but it is important that, because we're on lockdown, the work doesn't stop, that we do continue work, you know, reaching out to people, and we do continue asking for help when we need it. And, you know, one thing I just want to add to this is, you know, what a lot of people in addiction doesn't realise is that when they're reaching out to help themselves, with me, for instance, they're helping me as much as they're helping them. And I think that's an important message I'd give to people. It's not about, you know, it's about a joint thing. I need that as much as other people need. And that for me is really, it's been invaluable all the way through this, you know, with the support of my, you know, people who I work for instance, who reach out to me as CEOs on Gaino. It's a two-way street. And for me, it's also a time for reflection for everybody about how, especially in recovery, about how difficult things can become. But it will pass, and that is the thing. it will pass and we will get through it. But this is when you need each other a lot more than, but you need people, and you need to keep your routines going. When it gets really tough, you have to get tougher and really dig deep. That's what I would say to people.
There's that lovely term, isn't there, as well, that an addict alone or a depressive alone is in bad company. And I think that's a very kind of handy phrase, because it's suggesting that, you know, if we're in our condition and we're not reaching out and we're not sharing, then we're in bad company. And that can lead to all sorts of decisions. And I just wanted to add, funny enough, some of the positive calls I've had from clients I've worked with over Zoom and the phone, that some people are doing really well. And one of the reasons they're doing well is because they say addiction and mental health, a major component of that is sensitivity. So for some people, not having to go into work, for some people not having to have huge responsibilities of managing teams, maybe in the city or wherever they work, it's a relief, actually. And it has left them with that kind of quiet time to reflect on, what am I doing here? You know, what's my life like? Do I really want to stay this busy? Because if I get too busy, that drink looks more appealing. If I get too busy, that volume looks more appealing. So I think the positive, as you were touching on, Vince, is also about people sitting back and asking themselves, what do they need? You know, what really is important in their life? Yes, we need money to survive. You know, but then most people are talking about the relationships with their children, their granny they haven't seen for a while because they live across the other side of the country or whatever. I mean, I think there is a whole positive thing coming out of this too, about self-care and how we look after each other and how we look after ourselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And for the people around us to be aware as well, I think is really important.
Say a little bit more about that, Finn.
Well, just that, you know, we all have different ways that we deal with everyday life when you're in recovery. Billy, like you were saying, the exercise thing is really important to you. It's really important for the people that we're with to understand that maybe there's a few things that maybe they hadn't properly appreciated about us and our day-to-day recovery life. And I think that's really positive. I think it's amazing to be able to spend time with people and go, yeah, this is really me. This is, you know, warts and all me. And I know I couldn't have got through it on my own. I don't think I would have got through it as well as I have done without Joe and Sammy at all. They've been remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Sorry to, but it's really interesting what you say, because the positives that's come out of this for me is how much closer I feel to my children, to my parents and my sisters and brothers, because when it was all free and easy, I would take it for granted. They're going to be there. They're always there. So I never phoned them as much. I never saw them as much. But what I find now is I'm talking to them, and it's quite an interesting experience for me, because you know, my parents are 84 and 85 and have been very unwell. And we've really been able to talk quite a lot and quite openly. And my dad talked a lot about the isolation and my mum. And it was quite an experience to just talk to him and say, yeah, that isolation I felt, I remember that from when I was using, completely being isolated. And it's kind of brought a different dimension to my whole family's relationships, because we have time to talk to each other. We have time to listen to each other. We have time to support each other, which for me has been, again, I always try and look for gifts in situations like this. It's been an incredible gift to listen to my dad, to listen to my mum, to listen to my family and my children. And just have that connection has been, I have to take, you know, I'm one of these people, I have to look at a positive side of this, take some gifts from this. And if I'll take anything from it, it's the fact that I've been able to talk a lot more to my mum and dad and my brothers and sisters about our lives together, which has been amazing. I would say, you know, that for me has been a great thing and one that I hope will continue. But it has, this whole virus lockdown situation has given me the stop that I need. That actually, you know what, stop taking people for granted. Stop taking things for granted. They're not there forever. So that's the positive I'll take out of this, because I have to.
It's been a great discussion. I know we're almost up time wise. But just reflecting on that, how important it is to appreciate each other. And it's not always easy. It's not always easy for me, you know. Yeah. I'm Mr. Therapist and I do lots of work on myself and I go to meetings. And yet I still sometimes have to work hard to be appreciative, to step back and think people are doing their best, you know. It is amazing, you know, the Thursday evening round of applause for the NHS and the key workers and just those things. It's just like it's almost like we've had to initially be not told to do it, but just to kind of think about it, and in turn it becomes a sort of, well, for me it's become a kind of internal thing that I think, yeah, you know, be kind, people will come out of this in different ways. And it's important for me to be kind. As Finn said, it's important to be kind to the people we live with. It's not always my first thought, unfortunately, and I guess I'm not alone in that. So Billy, I mean, it's been amazing. It really has, and we could go on for a long time. Well, I know how valuable you are to me, by the way. Just want to say that while we're on the podcast, and what amazing work you do with people, and what amazing help you've given so many. I'm not even going to say hundreds. I'll probably say thousands of people since your time working in this field. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you both for inviting me. It's been a pleasure, absolute pleasure to talk to you and to speak into Finty again, although I haven't seen him for a very long time.
It's a real pleasure to talk to you, Billy. And you can find out more about the amazing work that Billy and the team do at Ibiza Calm at their website, www.ibizacalm.com. Thank you all again so much for listening. John and I feel deeply humbled by the reviews and the comments that we've had. If you feel that this has helped, it would be extraordinary if you could leave a review for us or give us a rating, because we would be very, very grateful. Thank you so much and see you next time.
Please subscribe so you can get each weekly edition uploaded automatically to your phones. Thanks very much.